This is Terry Finneman. Today is June 17th, 2020. I am interviewing Elena Beautiful Bald Eagle, the managing editor of the West River Eagle in Eagle Butte, South Dakota, on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation, for the Community Journalism in Middle America, Challenges and Innovations of COVID-19 Coverage Oral History Project. Elena, why don't you start out telling us, how long have you worked in journalism? And then tell us a little bit about your career path.
Sure. Well, I have been in journalism since 2017. I didn't start this journey as a journalist, as a writer. That wasn't what I thought I would be doing in life. I'm actually have experience in different aspects as a federal employee, and kind of have always loved writing, and then just started freelancing in 2017, and that is taking me to where I am today.
Who did you do freelancing for?
I did freelancing for this paper, so West River Eagle, and then I went and expanded that out to the Native Sun News in Rapid City.
So why were you interested in the managing editor position?
Well, I had done freelancing and was hired on at West River Eagle to do advertising sales. And it just seemed the natural progression within the organization. It was, being an editor was something that I wanted to do, just wanting more control over my writing and the content and how it was being presented was very important to me. So when this position opened up and I was asked to be editor, it was kind of it wasn't hard to say no.
What is your newspaper circulation?
Our circulation is 1,700 plus our online subscribers.
In regular times, how often do you publish?
We publish every week.
And how many people are there in your newsroom?
We have 3 people, including myself.
And what roles do the others have?
We have a full-time advertising sales rep and a customer service representative who also does a lot of our layout and design.
Okay, so you're really the sole news source then for your newsroom.
I am physically in person, yes, but I also have a few freelancers who are not full-time employees and I've got one who's out of state. So that's been really interesting.
When did the impact of COVID-19 on your newspaper start?
Well, we were covering COVID as far back as January. And so when, we saw a rise in cases nationwide, first it was, overseas, and then it came to the States. And I had made the decision in mid-March to close our doors to the public. And we were actually the first business to do so here in our town. And so when we did that, we lost counter sales, point of sales of our newspapers. That impacted some of our in-person traffic, so our foot traffic for advertisements and subscriptions as well. But beginning in April is when we saw financial impacts with our advertising. And we went from being a 2-section newspaper to being a 1-section newspaper for a couple of weeks.
So you mentioned you were the first business in town to close. Talk about what went into that decision and why you did that.
Sure. Just because we were following, you know, like I said, the rise in cases in the United States, I really drew on my own personal experience, and I was living in South Korea when the SARS outbreak was happening. And so I was really familiar with, I shouldn't say really familiar, I had, you know, experience on what it was like to be living in a time when a pandemic was happening and how, you know, how scary it was back then. So here at the news office, you know, back in, I believe it was February, we were buying hand sanitizer. We had the latex gloves, different things like that. So when all these cases were starting to rise nationwide, you know, for me, it wasn't, it was kind of an easy decision. You know, I came and I talked with the team here, you know, explained how I felt about it and what their feelings were about closing the doors. And, you know, we have an employee who is in the high risk population. And so it was just something that we did, and we let the public know that we were doing it.
So going back a little bit for historical context for people in the future. So what year was it that you were in South Korea?
I was in South Korea from 2002 to 2004.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about what you did there.
Well, I was in the army. I was stationed in a town or city called Wijongbu, and that's where it was, Camp Red Cloud in South Korea.
And talk a little bit about what your life was like during the pandemic at that time living there.
Sure. You know, it's really, I look back on it now. We didn't really have educational discussions about what SARS was. We just knew that it was out there. And, you know, we were told, you know, you guys cannot go off the base and go shopping, going out to restaurants off the base. But of course, nobody encouraged things. And it would be interesting to find out now, but a face mask is just not part of your uniform. So we just didn't have a lot of guidance. And I remember thinking that, and how, you know, my family would call and ask, how are you guys doing? What are you guys doing? And it just seemed like life was normal. It was normal, but it was also personal panic and personal responsibility to stay safe.
So you've decided at that time to close the doors to your newsroom. So after that, how did you and your staff adjust your routines to keep your newspaper going?
Mm-hmm. Well, we just continued on. A lot of our interviews that we, you know, well, first of all, on our door, we had posted a notification to the public with, you know, if a person had come to visit us for a certain reason, we listed who to contact. So we listed each one of our emails and our phone numbers. So if someone had an obituary to drop off, they would know who to contact. And then from there, we just, you know, we talked about social distancing. We wrote stories about it. But we were also very aware that we did have someone who was in, you know, who was high risk. And it's almost a daily conversation since we've closed about what our personal responsibilities are to one another, to ourselves and to one another as a team. So we do have a hand sanitizer, you know, disinfecting sprays. We've got boxes of masks. So that was the precautionary measures that we took. As far as the new stuff, all of my interviews that I conduct now for stories are done over the phone, via mail, or, you know, sometimes people send videos. And it's been really interesting to have to adjust to, you know, different ways of connecting with people.
How have you gone about photography?
Well, I was invited to a social distancing graduation, and I was worried, first of all, going there. But when I did get there, I think everybody knew that by then, staying 6 feet away, not shaking hands, not hugging, was normal. And it was kind of routine by then. So with photographs, I'm really lucky that I have different lenses that I can use to, you know, zoom in. So as far as photos, it hasn't really been an issue. I can still maintain social distancing and take pictures.
So just to clarify a little bit, so you closed the newsroom doors, but so are you saying that your staff continued to work there but just didn't let the public in? Or did you work from home at any point? Or tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. We did try to work, you know, we had our person who was high risk try to work from home, tried it, and then just found that, you know, her internet speed at home just wasn't working out. And so she came back here, and the whole time we remained fully functional. You know, we were still coming to work. Going remote would have been ideal, but it just didn't work out that way. I tried it. I worked from home just because I got sick. I don't know if I actually had COVID, but I know that I was sick for, I think, 4 weeks. From March to April. So that was a challenge in itself.
So what is the pandemic environment like in your community? How many cases have you had? You know, tell us a little bit about what's going on there.
Okay. We have had, to date, 6 known COVID cases. And it's been really, really interesting to experience everything that we are going through. From the beginning of April, well, we live on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation, and there's so much to say just about the demographics of this reservation, but I think it's really important to explain that portion before I move on. So the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation, our area is roughly the size of Connecticut. It's open prairie. There are rural areas, rural towns on the reservation. And because of the Dawes Act, back in the 1800s, and because of homesteading that occurred here on Lakota tribal lands, today we now have a demographic of mostly Native American people with, you know, a mixture of non-tribal members who are living on the reservation. So while most of the reservation is tribal lands, there are also what we call fee lands and private lands. This is really important to know because when you live on the reservation here, you are subject to different laws. I am not a tribal member, but I am Native American. And my husband is a tribal member from here. So different laws apply to him and different laws apply to me. And so it's really interesting to be aware that, you know, this is the state that we're living in. So this is really important because at the beginning of April, the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe deputized tribal, I shouldn't say tribal members, they deputized checkpoint deputies. And they set up public health checkpoints and different entry points to the reservation. And this has since gained a lot of national and international attention. You know, there's people who are for it, and there are people who are just dead set against this. So having said that, these checkpoints have been in operation since the beginning of April. And we are now at 6 cases, whereas if you compared that to other reservations in the state and throughout the nation, 6 cases is, it's very low. It's a very low number compared to what other tribal nations are going through. And so that has, the checkpoints have really been a huge part of our work these past few months. And then I can go into more about that later on.
Yeah, well, I think we can. I mean, since you mentioned the national and international news coverage, why don't you point out exactly what the dispute was that Governor Kristi Noem brought up?
Sure. So there's so much. Oh my gosh, there's just so much that's happened with these checkpoints. Okay, so in the beginning or mid-May, you know, the governor has had news conferences almost daily about coronavirus and how, you know, different things that are going on within the state. And during one of the news conferences, you know, spoke out with her opposition and her concern about the checkpoints. And she did say that she has received, and so have the South Dakota congressional delegates. They have also received complaints from people who, you know, have had who've had bad experiences with the checkpoints. So of course that got national attention, and we've had, you know, different news stations, news crews come through and, you know, film and interview and different things like that about the checkpoints themselves. And it's still an ongoing issue. The checkpoints are currently still in operation. And, you know, the tribal chairman here has said that they will continue until the threat of COVID-19 is no longer upon the people.
So you mentioned a little bit ago that you were also very sick, but you're not sure if you had it or not. So what is testing accessibility like there?
Testing now, it has evolved now where the tribe is starting to test in rural communities. They began this, we're going on our third week now, where they're going out to the smaller areas. You know, some of these communities have 15 homes in there, within their areas. And so the tribe is now working with its tribal health department, with the local Indian Health Service hospital, and they are deploying, you know, their infectious disease nurses, tribal health representatives to these rural areas. And I just talked to the, you know, the infectious disease director of nursing yesterday. And she said, you know, what we're really trying to do is test every community on the reservation. They're offering testing to all residents, tribal and non-tribal members alike, which is really interesting, because if you are not a member of a federally recognized tribe, you normally would not be able, you wouldn't be eligible for, you know, health services through the Indian hospital here, unless, of course, it was life or death and, you know, you were seeking emergency care. So the tribe has opened its testing to all residents on the reservation. And so the nurse said, we understand that people should not be traveling for the 4th of July holiday, but we know that people will. And so right now, the goal of testing is to, one, get as many residents as they can tested, and two, it's to establish a baseline of health for as many residents as they can living on the reservation.
So right now, from a national perspective, in the United States, for historical context, there's some people taking the pandemic very seriously, and there's some people who are not taking it seriously. So you mentioned that you have the checkpoints. Overall, though, what do you feel like the broader attitude is on the reservation? Is this something that people are taking very, very seriously, or not so much?
I truly believe that people understand the importance of staying safe and staying healthy during this time. We are very aware, I believe the people are very aware, that as a demographic, as Native people, there are just higher rates of cancer, of diabetes, hypertension, high blood pressure, you know, so many different health conditions that put this demographic of people in the high risk category. And, you know, one of the things that the chairman does on his daily radio address is, you know, go over numbers, not just of reservations within the state, but also reservations in Wyoming and in Arizona. I am a citizen of the Navajo Nation. And so, you know, what is happening there, it's day and night compared to what is happening here. And it's something that constantly, you know, you see it on social media. I hear it. People call my office asking, how are you doing, Elena? Is your family okay? I'm so sorry this is happening to your people. There are people who have called to say that I never would have expected to ever hear from, first of all, and for them to be calling, worried, asking how things are, what can they do to protect themselves. It's really, it's been an eye-opener. And to me, that is evidence of just how serious people are taking these precautions. On the other hand, I have met people who, you know, are so nonchalant about the whole thing. I you know, met someone the other day who refused outright to wear a mask. When, you know, he knocked on the door and I did let him in, but I offered a mask and he said no, that he didn't really believe in it and just would not wear a mask. And that was a really interesting experience.
So continuing on, you know, discussing these kinds of personal phone calls that you're getting, talk a little bit about what it's like to have to continue to press on and put out your newspaper while you personally are, you know, sick for one, and then just personally dealing with the toll of all of this.
Mm-hmm. It's been really, really trying at times. You know, being sick and being sick so early, I truly believe that now it's a lot easier to get tested. But, you know, when I did get sick, there were certain symptoms that you had to have in order to get tested. And because I lacked one of those symptoms, I was not tested for COVID, but I had been tested for everything else. And those tests came back negative. So there, you know, it was really a very scary time for me personally. And so I self-isolated in my home, but I was still able to work. I cannot imagine not working and taking leave. I think that personally is just really would be a difficult thing for me to do. And during that time, I didn't do that. Continuing to work the best I could, staying in contact with the team here was really, really important to me. So that's what I did.
Why? And just tell us why. Why was that so important to you to continue serving your community?
Well, we are, even though we are not a Native-owned newspaper, we are one of the few newspapers in the state who is, you know, operating on tribal lands. And it was so important to me, and it is so important to me, to not lose sight of informing the readers, our readers and the public, about what is happening. Because at the time that I got sick, all of this was happening. The checkpoints going up, the tribe declaring a state of emergency, the different the decisions that they were making that were having real-time impacts on the lives of our people here. Getting that out was so important to me. And quite frankly, there's nobody else to do it. We don't have, you know, we don't have other news reporters here in the office who I could turn to for that. And that's really something that I'm trying to fix and find a solution to that.
Yeah, so going off that, I think a lot of people don't realize just how many hours a weekly newspaper editor puts in every week, because you are it. So tell us, you know, even from a regular time, I mean, you work all the time, but now you're essentially in a situation where there's breaking news like every single day. So tell us, you know, how many hours have you been working every week, and has that changed from what's normal?
It has. I honestly do not get a day off. There is, you know, changes that happen every single day. We have a routine now. The tribal chairman, you know, gives his daily address on the radio at noon. So tuning into that and then writing a breaking news story with an update about what's going on is, you know, just part of our everyday life now. And on top of that, we are having, you know, the State Department of Health holds news conferences. So did the governor, which he has scaled back this month. But there's, you know, these different things that are happening, constantly happening, and changes that are going on. And a really interesting thing began, you know, last month, was that different tribes began reaching out and sending information. And so where we went from, you know, I don't want to just say just covering Cheyenne River, because I have tried to cover other areas as well, which would include, you know, coverage of, you know, the different reservations here. But Whereas before I had to research and reach out and, you know, try to contact people, they began sending stuff in, photos, COVID statistics, mass testing sites, press releases, different things like that just started flowing in, which was wonderful. You know, that's like every news reporter's dream come true. But because there is a flood of all this information, this content and data that was coming in, that also meant work. And it's really interesting because we publish every week, but we also publish every day on our website. And from that website is our presence on social media. And it's just grown so much as far as our online presence.
Do you have any kind of specific percentage increase or anything more concrete that you can share about that?
Sure. We went from on an average of 4,000 to 7,000 visitors to our website a month to 250,000 visitors.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, it's been a huge increase in traffic to our website. And with that, I just looked at our statistics on our online subscriptions. In 1 year, from January to December last year, I think we were about $750 worth of worth of online subscribers, you know, different variances of subscription payments that were made within that year. Well, we have surpassed that in 2 months, and are in the thousands of dollars right now in just online subscriptions. So, and I truly believe that that's one, just our presence on the website, and our content is so unique, and it's a different perspective of what we are going through here. I truly believe that what we're doing here is such a huge service to the people. You know, it's just literally a native perspective of things that are happening. It's there's not a lot of newspapers out there like what we are doing here.
You know, you guys perform such a critical role, and there's long been criticism that the mainstream press does not do a good job covering reservations. And so how do you think coverage has been so far as how reservations are being impacted by the pandemic from other media?
Okay. It's frustrating, to be quite honest. From my own personal experience, you know, without being a journalist, without being an editor, and just being a person who is seeking information, there is lack of information from mainstream media. And when there is coverage and when there is information out there, it is many times fractioned information or inaccurate information or romanticized information about what is actually happening and what issues are important to people, to Native people. There's also a broad generalizing of what those issues may be. You know, I saw a national story done where, you know, they compared what is happening on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation with what is happening down on the Navajo reservation. And they didn't, you can't just call this reservation Cheyenne River Reservation, because the river is, yes, it's an important part of the name of this reservation, but they're really Sioux. You know, it's the Sioux people here. Little things like that, I think, really have an impact. I don't know if that makes sense, but so that's just me personally. Now, as a journalist that bleeds, so my feelings personally bleed over, obviously, you know, it bleeds over into me being a journalist. I have had national news sources contact me asking for photos, for videos, or for writing on different things that are happening here. And it's been really, and that itself has been an interesting experience, because they know what they want. And it's almost purposefully directing what kind of news content they are looking for, rather than reporting on what is actually happening here. It's been a learning experience, because as an editor, I take what I've learned just through those interactions and have learned what not to do, what I wouldn't do if I could have, you know, a newsroom full of writers, rather than say, hey, you know, Joe, I need you to go here and try to get, you know, the mayor and corner the mayor and try to see what the mayor would say if you ask these questions. That's not, it's almost, I don't want to say a lack of honesty, but I don't know how else to describe it.
So with all of the breaking news, with other media calling you, with other people checking in, with other people sending you stuff, how many hours a week do you think you're working right now?
Well, I get about 4, maybe 6 hours of sleep at night. And working from home is quite normal. And just being in the office, I honestly don't know that answer. It's just constant work. And you know, there are times when the tribal chairman here will do an emergency radio broadcast about different changes that are happening or new cases of COVID on the reservation, and that, you know, you have to do it. You've got to wake up and get the story out there and, you know, inform the public about what's happening. So just work is constant.
So we talked about how your social media and your website have really blown up in popularity. Talk a little bit, compare and contrast of before the pandemic and now. I know it's pretty common for a lot of weekly newspapers to not really update their website all that often, or to maybe wait to do so until the day the print paper comes out. So tell us a little bit how your web strategy and social media strategy has and hasn't changed.
Okay. So as far as our website, normally before the pandemic, we would update the website the morning the paper hit the newsstands. So that would normally occur Wednesday morning, mid-morning, when all the articles, the new content, is actually published. Previously, before the pandemic, you know, of course, we'd write breaking news stories and publish that as soon as, you know, we had the information. But that was rare. It didn't happen that often. But since the pandemic has happened, writing breaking news stories is almost a daily occurrence. And so having access to the, you know, to the internet has been absolutely critical to the what I normally do. So if I wanted to go fishing, or if I had to go, you know, to an appointment, I need to be prepared. I have to be prepared to have my phone, to have it charged up completely, and to take my laptop with me. And so with that, constantly having to update the website, we now have a presence. We did have a presence on Twitter before, but I personally didn't really know how to use Twitter. We didn't have that many followers. And so with what was going on, what has been going on during this pandemic, getting information, real-time information out there on Twitter and on Facebook has been part of our daily routine at the office. And it's almost changed the way we write stories in the newspaper itself. There are times when, you know, we print with the paper, and then I remember, oh my gosh, we did the story on the website. Why didn't I use the story from the website as content for the newspaper? So it's almost been, you know, it's been a struggle to remember, what did we write? What has happened since the last time we went to print? And what absolutely should go into the paper? That's been a really interesting and frustrating battle that I've had as the editor. Because what I think, you know, people know, because I've put it out there on the website, our readers may not, you know, have the internet, may not visit the website, don't have social media. We live in a very poverty-stricken area that not everybody has a phone, not everyone has internet, and I have to constantly remind myself of that and try to focus on the paper itself. And it's really interesting. It's an evolving way we put, you know, we put news out. How we outsource that data has been interesting, and reminding ourselves that our paper should be, you know, a huge part of our focus.
So in the last 3 months, what have been some of the biggest stories that you've covered?
Well, the checkpoints have been constant stories. And different opinions that have been put out there have made this story one, you know, our checkpoint stories are almost always some of the most read stories on our website. Writing about what happens at the checkpoints was huge. And then, you know, what Governor Kristi Noem and her opposition was big news too. But one of our most read stories was when the South Dakota legislatures wrote a bipartisan letter to the governor, basically telling her to back off of these checkpoints because there is a ruling from the 1990s that says that, you know, tribes, the state does not have jurisdiction over roads running through Indian lands. So you having non-tribal members, having these state lawmakers write a letter, a bipartisan letter to the governor, really resonated with the people. And for a few weeks, like I said, was one of the most read stories on our website. Other things that have happened since then, or besides our checkpoints, have just been the rise in COVID cases. That's been really a really popular, most read story as well. Another thing that has happened is just, you know, the missing and murdered Indigenous women is another issue. Anytime we write about, you know, the MMIW movement, there is traction on those stories. So, so as far as, you know, major stories, as far as the pandemic, it has, you know, a lot of it has been the checkpoint stories.
So going off that, talking a little bit more about your news strategy, obviously it's really easy to fill an entire issue just with pandemic-related content. You know, talk about if you make any kind of effort or if it's just impossible at this point. Obviously, I mean, you're talking about covering the missing and murdered Indigenous women, but are you trying to have a point of covering other things as well, or how do you balance that?
In the beginning of this, you know, I think back to the beginning of April, where we had to go to one section because of the huge decrease of advertisers or advertisements in our paper. There were a few weeks there where it was almost all COVID coverage, and that was the time people, you know, social distancing, the term was new. How do people wear face masks? You know, that was a question we got. How do we wear it? Can we make our own face mask? Different things like that took up a good portion of the newspaper at the beginning of April. But we also have so many other things, just because this area is so vast, you know, and there's different, the demographics, and we always have to remember that not all of our readers are tribal members, not all of our readers are, you know, we have a huge, agriculture here is so huge that we have started expanding our ag coverage. So we do work with the local, you know, USDA office. We now source information from different, agriculture organizations at the state level. We work with the South Dakota State University, you know, to make sure that we are not forgetting just how important ag is here, because no matter what happens, there could be tornadoes, there could be an earthquake, people's lives continue. And to make sure that we are offering information, we're writing about things that are happening is really important. We didn't stop writing about graduation and school. That took up a good portion of our weeks in May. Different, you know, the schools had different, we've got 5 high schools on our reservation, and they all did something different, and being able to cover that was really important to us. And now, you know, it's summertime, and the high school rodeos are still happening, but we're still able to cover that. So different things like that, it's really important to me to try to remain balanced and to almost, I don't want to say purposefully scale back on our COVID coverage, because that's not what not my intent. It hasn't been my intent, but making sure that we cover other things has been really important. And it's, you know, one thing that I'm really proud of is that we've gotten away, and I think our readers are informed, whereas before it was panic mode of, you know, we need information on this, and now it's just come normal. Life is, you know, life in the pandemic is normal.
So you've mentioned the decline in advertising revenue. Talk about how your newspaper has weathered that.
We have the wonderful blessing of having a lot. The tribe has had a huge impact on our advertising, and they were very lucky that they have not pulled their advertising, because they are still, you know, they're placing full page ads in our newspaper with information about COVID. We have ads in the paper from the tribe that are mass testing sites. We have travel information. Do you have questions about the checkpoints? You know, that's a full page ad there. And signs and symptoms of COVID-19 and what to do if you have symptoms, or who to call when you have medically related questions. You know, different informative ads like that, the tribe began placing in April and have not stopped. As far as non-tribal advertising, we have lost a lot of that. You know, we have businesses who call us and say, I'm sorry, but we're just, you know, we just can't afford the ad right now. Can you just stop all of our normal ads, you know, the weekly ads that they would have run? The casinos who have shut down have pulled their advertising. And it was very worrisome and stressful at the beginning of all of this, I would say in April. But since then, and I have to commend the tribe for, you know, wanting to keep people abreast of everything that has happened and is happening and what their plans are to, their preventive measures of stemming the spread of coronavirus here on this reservation. And that has really helped us financially. You know, who knows what our conversation would be right now if they weren't doing that and if we did not have those ads.
How do you see the business model for the newspaper industry in general changing as a result of the pandemic?
Well, I know of, two newspapers in South Dakota who have folded and completely shut down permanently, just out of business. Another newspaper just stopped publishing the print editions for a couple of weeks and did not update their website. So I don't know if they just furloughed for those couple of weeks. And that has really been, so these revelations with these newspapers, one, you know, two closing and two, or excuse me, another one not printing, has really, you know, had me thinking, the team thinking of what can we do besides what we've already been doing, because we offer other services besides the paper. You know, we have printing services. We have one of the few industrial printers in the community, and we normally have people who come in to print stuff, but that also declined because, you know, events are canceled, schools are closed, different aspects of life that have just really impacted our overall business. And I can only speak for my experience here and what we've had to go through, and the different things that we've had to adjust. Now, as far as our business model, I have, you know, embraced how important an online presence is. Being active on social media, constantly updating our website, has really driven the subscriptions. It's skyrocketed, and that has helped us out tremendously in this time. It would be really interesting to speak with other newspapers to see what they are doing differently. You know, another thing that we had talked about was limiting the amount of stories that the freelancers submit to us, to cut costs that way, to where we're not paying so much, you know, for freelance writing, which was, we could have done it, but that would have meant more work for me. And so it's been, you know, personal and professional struggle on what should we do and what can we do.
What changes to your newspaper operations during the pandemic do you expect will continue after it's over?
I expect us to continue with our breaking news on the website. I don't see us going back to updating it only once a week. Updating it as much as we can when we can should be something that carries over after the pandemic is done. I also think, you know, just being personally, our personal responsibility and our responsibility to one another is also important. Because we do talk, our team, we talk every day. We ask how we're doing. We ask how family's doing. And it's just made us a lot closer and more, we always say that we're a family, and this just brought us so much closer to one another. I don't expect that to go away. And excuse me, it's been really, really wonderful getting to know, you know, coworkers on a different level that may not have happened previously.
What changes to your newspaper operations during the pandemic are you most ready for them to be over?
I would like, as a journalist, to be able to meet with people again. I think in-person interviews are so much more rewarding than phone interviews. For different reasons, you know, it just, to me, makes the story that much richer in content when you have face-to-face interviews with a source. So I personally am just ready to go back out and be in the community, talk with community members, talk with readers, and see, you know, go back to life that way. I am also excited when, you know, we don't have, we have other advertisers. Because when you have advertising, it means that things are happening in your community. Life is happening. Events are happening. And so it's, you know, the health of advertising really reflects on the health of the economy. And I'm ready to see an increase in advertising like it was before the pandemic.
How has the pandemic influenced your views of the role of journalism in society?
What journalists do, our work is important. It is so important. And I think in rural areas such as this, sometimes we are the only news source for people. So getting a story right, getting it right the first time, is critical to what we do. On a national level, seeing and hearing about the attack on journalism has been very troublesome. And it, quite frankly, it worries me. It worries me because I have seen and I've been on the receiving end of rhetoric that what we do is fake news, or it's easily brushed off. And it's really interesting to see that some of the things that are happening in the nation coming to our rural communities and having that impact, how some readers see the news and the newspaper here.
So going off of that, what do you want readers to know about journalism right now?
Journalism is history. What I do, what we do today will be here in 100 years. I am sitting in a room with our archives going back to 1902. We have the newspapers here. I can open up any one of these, you know, archival books and read about what was going on in our communities 80, 90, 100 years ago. And what we do is super important to keeping people informed, keeping the public informed. And what we do with integrity, with honesty, and with the mission to keep everyone informed and as often as possible.
What would you want journalists 100 years from now, who may be covering a new pandemic, what do you want them to know?
Write everything down. What may seem like a small, unimportant event is important. And learn from past pandemics. Research what happened here, what worked and what didn't work. What were we saying today that you might use in the future? Pandemics are horrible, horrible events, and people die, and people get sick, and people may not ever recover from the side effects of being sick. And it is important to capture these events as they're happening, no matter how small you think they might be. What you are doing today matters because in 100 years from your time, people are going to be looking back and wanting to know and researching, and what you write today, what you capture in this moment, matters.
Is there anything else you want to add?
It is important for people to support local journalism. There are so many ways to support local journalism. And, you know, sometimes you may not be able to pay for content, but you could show appreciation for the work and for the content itself. Another thing that I'd like to add is that I hope in my lifetime that more Indigenous journalists, more Indigenous editors, more Indigenous news source, newspapers, photographers, photojournalists are able to diversify newsrooms across the nation. I think this is a perspective and a voice that just is underrepresented and needs to be. So that's what I hope for the future.
Thank you. This is the conclusion of the oral history.